Hello, and welcome to the Student Ministry Conversations podcast with your hosts, Russell Martin and Brent Aiken. This podcast is all about equipping, encouraging, and inspiring youth pastors weekly with topics that are brought to the table by youth pastors from all over the world. And now, here's your host for this week, Brent Aiken.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. If this is your first time listening to us, we want to welcome you and invite you over to our website, studentministryconversations.org, where you can find all of our previous episodes, show notes, blog articles, and much more. Our goal is that you are inspired, encouraged, and the things that you hear on this podcast can equip you to be a better student pastor for the church that you're serving in. So today we are sitting down with Mark Matlock, and Mark has been in the youth ministry realm for a while. He is the founder of Wisdom Works, which is a consultancy that helps churches and faith-based organizations use their collective wisdom to adapt to changing times, especially in the church world today. Mark has also been a part of Youth Specialties. He has founded a bunch of different other youth ministry opportunities as well. He's authored more than 20 books, and he also has worked with Barna for Next Gen Studies and much, much more. So today we are sitting down to talk about the stumbling blocks or the blind spots that can happen when it comes to youth ministry leadership. Great conversation. Can't wait for you guys to listen to it. So without anything else to do, here's our conversation with Mark. All right. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. Like I said, today we are sitting down with Mark Matlock, and man, I don't want to steal your thunder, Mark. You've done a lot for the youth ministry world. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're doing now, and why people might know you in the youth ministry world.
Yeah. Well, for, you know, gosh, 25, 30 years, I did, large conferences for teenagers that were kind of discipleship focused, where we kind of taught comprehensively on a theme Friday night and most of the day Saturday. And it was myself. I started with a guy named Dawson McAllister, actually, who was just passed away a couple of years ago. And then with Chris Tomlin, Todd Proctor, Joel Engel were some of the bands that were involved back in those days. Leading worship, and then took that over myself and Mercy Me, started something called Planet Wisdom, which was, we inherited the conference from Dawson and his team, and we did that for several years, and I kept doing that until I eventually, we merged with Youth Specialties, and then I became the president of Youth Specialties for several years, putting on national youth workers conventions, things of that nature. So I've written over 20 books for teens and parents, and I've done a lot of research on teens with Barna, and the book that just came out right before the pandemic was Faith for Exiles, Five Ways a New Generation is Following Jesus in Digital Babylon, that I did with the president of Barna Research, David Kinneman, who's been a friend for over two decades. So that's a little bit of the history. And I started out actually as a magician, doing magic shows for youth groups. And I never set out to be a youth minister or to even be a Bible teacher or anything like that. I was actually studying to be an anthropological consultant and thought I would work with Wycliffe Bible translators doing that work. Wow. Bible translations always been a big part of my life, but in doing some missions work, found that doing a little magic show could get us into public schools in different countries and could draw crowds, and started doing that stuff for youth groups, and was given this opportunity to be part of this conference. And I thought, that might be a fun thing to do before I go do grad school in cognitive anthropology or something like that. So, and then ended up falling in love with the church, falling in love with youth ministry. And that's been the path that God's had me on up until when I resigned from Youth Specialties in, I think it was 2016, around February. And that was just felt like it was time to hand it off to somebody else. And that was Planet Wisdom and Youth Specialties. And I left really not knowing what I was going to do. And I started consulting with different organizations that just started calling me in to do special things. And even calling it consulting is a little weird, because it was really taking on very specific projects for groups over a long term that they didn't have capacity to do. And I loved it. I thought I would do that forever until one of my the clients I was working with, Movement org that has City Gospel Movement happening in New York, and then they launch and support City Gospel Movements globally. Their CEO left, and the board asked me if I'd be the interim CEO there, and I've been kind of filling that role as the CEO of movement.org for the last year now.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was a long answer to your question.
No, you're good. I mean,
I don't know that I told it the most interesting of ways either. That was kind of just like, hey, here, let me give you the bullet points.
No, you're good. But I mean, from me being one, I mean, I've been to National Youth Workers Conventions when you were still on that team. And I took my youth group to two different Planet Wisdoms in Dallas. Was really, really bummed when those stopped happening. But it was, man, it's a privilege to have you on the show. It's awesome just to get to talk to you, because I've done a lot of things that you've been involved in as far as that goes. So thank you for what you've done and everything as far as that goes. And
yeah,
so,
please tell me, were you a youth pastor in all those contexts, or were you ever a student? Because you're young enough to have been a student.
No, I was a youth pastor in all the context.
Okay, that makes me feel a little better.
No, yeah,
I'm at that stage now where I have these youth pastors come up and go, man, I remember coming to your conference when I was in middle school. It's like, and I'm like, oh man, I'm not that old, am I? But yeah, right? I am.
Yeah, just one of those other phases and steps of life where you're like, it is. Like we, last night in our youth program, I input someone's birthday, and I was like, I graduated high school before you were born. Like, that hurt. But one of those things, one of those steps of life, I suppose. Yep, but besides the point, besides all the fun collection and figuring out what you've done, your topic today was blind spots in youth ministry leadership. So what are you thinking specifically when you say that?
Yeah, well, you know, I've spoken to over a million students, you know, face to face in my youth ministry career. And that meant that I was doing a lot of work with churches. So I've been to a lot of places, not just big cities, but small little out of the way cities, you know, especially starting out when I was first dating my wife, I was traveling at 280 days a year and doing local programs. So it could be a school assembly for a church that they've then had a evangelistic program that night, or just doing stuff on Sunday mornings, Wednesday nights, Thursday nights, whatever, whenever anybody needed me. And that was a lot. And so I got to see a lot of things. And the beauty of what I did was I was going to the same cities about the same time of the year, every year. So, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul, we always went there in the first week of December. And, you know, then we first weekend of January, when things were kind of getting back and running again, we were in Lakeland, Florida. And so anyway, we had a rhythm to what we did. So we were really serving, you know, churches over time. And I got to see a lot of youth pastors move around. And just over the years, you start seeing patterns. And, you know, the name of my organization is Wisdom Works, and that put on Planet Wisdom, and now is the consulting group that I run. But the whole idea of wisdom is pattern recognition. It's seeing patterns of behavior and then knowing how to either predict or forecast things or make decisions based on those patterns. And that's why we typically think of people as they're older being wise, because they've seen more and they've been able to identify those patterns. If you think about it, that's all that Proverbs is it's a collection of patterns that have been distilled into these small statements. And that's why reading the Bible and studying God's word can make us wiser beyond our years, because we're able to absorb the patterns that God's observed so we can see life from his perspective. So I thought, you know, yeah, it'd be interesting to talk a little bit about some of the blind spots that I've seen in youth pastors' lives. And, you know, at times I sometimes thought that these things were, well, they're, you know, these are deficits or they come along with the job. And then I started realizing, no, these are things that happen a lot that maybe we need to be thinking about differently. And so that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, we definitely, as we've gone through and interviewed different guests and had you're episode 88 now. But with our different guests, I've noticed a recurring trend as far as when you get to the ones that have been, I guess that would take the title veteran in youth ministry, the ones that have seen youth ministry happen for a while, the ones that have been in the trenches for longer than the new guys, the ones that have seen new guys come and go, there tends to be this constant of, hey, this is coming, look out for this, or hey, here's all of these things that I, and it's all comes back down to patterns, like you just said. There's so many different things. We just had one not too long ago, actually last week, or we just talked about how just making yourself more organized and how organization is a young youth pastor killer, because there's a lot of people that jump in, but then also there are so many other things. And I'm interested to hear specifically what you mean, like blind spot wise, what are some blind spots in youth ministry that you've seen over the years that kind of recur in pattern?
Yeah, well, the first thing that I would say is that parents are your friends, and they can be your allies as well. And so a lot of times we see parents as the problem, the root source of the young people that we're serving. We go, hey, I can trace back, you know, the problems of these teenagers with their parents. And that's absolutely right. I mean, I can say as the parent of two adult children now, you know, most of their problems are because of me. And most of the problems they have because of me are because I was trying to do the right thing and it didn't go the way I thought it was going to go. I was trying to protect them, or I was trying to prevent something from happening in their life, or I was, you know, too strict when I needed to be a little more gracious, but I was trying to, you know, hold a line to protect them or help them. And the reality is that parents are really searching for help from us. And I know that there has been a lot of national movement on this over the last decade in terms of youth ministry and parenting, but I still find it a problem today that a lot of youth pastors see parents as an enemy or a problem rather than inviting them in to be a part of the solution toward the emotional health and well-being of their young people. And one of the things I've learned about parents is a lot of times they'll say one thing to our face, tell us how good we're doing, all that. And then they'll go and they'll tell the pastor something quite different. And then the pastor comes and approaches us and says, hey, you need to work on this. So the other second blind spot. So first one is, you know, parents are your friends and allies. The second thing would be that pastors are not as jealous of you as you think they are, or threatened of you by you as you think they are. I don't know how many times I have heard youth pastors tell me that their pastor is threatened by them, and that's why they're being hard on them or they're putting pressure on them. And a lot of the perception of that comes because everybody else seems to be telling you you're doing a great job. I went back and looked at some of my earlier messages when I was just starting out, and I go, oh my goodness, how did they even let me get on stage? This was so poorly constructed. The theology was weak. I was definitely looking to get more likes for myself from the audience than I was really trying to help them as much as I thought I was. It was really more about me. And I realized that there were people above me, other pastors and things like that were trying to help me mature and grow. They may not have been great managers. They may not have known exactly how to help me in that because, you know, they may not have had any kind of exposure to how do you actually manage people. But a lot of times we'll have people tell us on Sunday what a great job we did. We should pay attention to the fact that they're probably telling the pastor the exact same thing, but we know the pastor may not have done a great job. So they're probably doing the same thing to us. And what that turns into is a feeling like, man, the pastor's really threatened by me because everybody really likes it when I preach. And, you know, I seem to have more of a energy around what we're doing. And there's no question that when you're younger, you have, you know, everything in our culture is built on youth. So when you are younger in the context of a church, there is no question that you have an advantage just because you're younger. You have energy, you have life, you have vitality, but you don't always have that wisdom. And you're going to have people that are older than you trying to help you grow and mature, kind of like to your point about organization. A lot of pastors start putting a little pressure on their youth pastor to be a little more organized or to think ahead. And they take that as an attack rather than realizing, oh no, they're trying to help me grow. They're helping me see something I don't see about myself. And I think that's just really, really important to realize. Most pastors that I've seen, and even in research that we did with Barna on pastors and youth pastors, the majority of pastors said that they and their youth pastor were on the same page or working toward the same objectives and outcomes. So I think we have to really understand that and build a great relationship. And if you're saying, I think my pastor's threatened by me, stop for a moment and just say, do I need to look inward a little bit? Maybe he's not as threatened by me or she's as threatened by me as I think. Maybe they're just trying to help me see something in myself I'm not seeing.
Sure. No, I am literally a spitting image of what you just said. I was definitely I was the young guy that was not organized. And I was just like, well, hey, if we do an event, we do an event kind of thing like that. And my pastor and a group of people from one of my early churches was like, hey, we gotta put him on the straight and narrow when it comes to organization. And man, they put me through the ringer as far as that goes of like, hey, like we're going to start having monthly meetings. And like, it was, hey, by the next meeting, you need to have a calendar. By the next meeting, you need to have a parent newsletter. And you need to send that out at least 3 of the next 4 weeks, all this stuff. And so it was one of those things that at the time I was like, oh my gosh, this is miserable. Like they are literally trying to fire me. And then now looking back, I'm like, I probably wouldn't be in youth ministry to this day without all of the stuff that they did in hindsight. And so I know that we probably have a few listeners listening now that are like, yes, like my pastor hates me, or like I have this like sect of parents that are literally after my job. And it's like, well, like you said, maybe stop for a second. And maybe there's a little introspection to do. Are there any other blind spots?
I've got a few, but one of the things is what you said, where they said, we're going to meet every week and we're going to get a calendar. So this is typically not a great response to how they're trying to solve the problem, which is why it feels like you're being attacked. So, you know, in Harry Potter, where you have Dolores Umbridge, who comes into Hogwarts and she starts nailing all of the policies and the principles on the wall. It's kind of like that. They're going, hey, there's a problem here. So we're going to create processes. We're going to require all this stuff. That's not always the best approach either. The better approach is to say, hey, I sense that you're trying to help me grow, or that there's something maybe that I'm not performing well on. And get them to talk about it rather than just letting them put the solution on you, because their solution may not be the right solution. The putting a straitjacket on you, you know, to try and control your time or whatever, it may not be the best thing for them, but there may be a better way to solve it if you just understand what they're really concerned about. So I think I've learned that as a manager myself. I get really tempted to go into the Dolores Umbridge mode and start going, okay, we got a new policy around how we're going to do this and a new policy around how we're going to do that. I love policies. And so I'm kind of weird that way. But it's not a good way to manage always, because you can crush the spirit of the organization and what's going on. So you have to find that balance and figure out how to open up that conversation a little bit.
That's great. You said you had other blind spots. So before we move on, what are some more?
Another blind spot is being aware of how our spouses affect the work we do. I've seen a lot of youth pastors get fired because of their spouse, and they don't know it, because obviously the church can't let somebody go because of their spouse. But I've seen that pattern happen enough where I go, oh, I see what's going on here. They're getting annoyed by the youth pastor's spouse or the youth director's spouse. And so they're really firing the spouse when they're getting rid of the youth pastor. And so it's really important that you understand that even though they don't work for the church, and a lot of churches are getting better at this, but even though your spouse doesn't work for the church, they have a huge impact on how you are perceived in that context. And just be mindful of that. Be mindful of how people are relating to them. It's not fair. I'm not saying that it's right, but it's a reality. And I've seen some people carry a lot of wounds that have led to some really destructive behaviors that may have been able to be solved if the church had been more honest about the fact that, hey, as a couple, you guys are really not, you know, like there's some people that are really concerned about some things. So it's not like they were doing anything wrong. It was just personality conflicts or, you know, things that weren't going right, or a spouse was maybe overstepping their role or their boundaries, or the spouse is being asked to do too much for somebody who isn't on staff. So just be mindful of how your spouse affects the role that you're in. They can be a big help, but they can also work against you by sometimes taking up your offenses on things or getting over involved in certain things. So just something to be mindful of, especially if you've been let go for mysterious reasons a couple of times. Stop and go, I wonder if I'm not seeing what's really going on under the surface here.
Yeah, sure. So what are the dangers outside of obviously getting fired that can come from not preparing or potentially planning or trying to remove these blind spots from your leadership?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, so there's something, I don't know how you say it, because I never really heard anybody say it out loud. I've just read it in books, but it's a tool that I've used a lot called the Johari window, J-O-H-A-R-I, and the J may be silent, and I don't know that. It's a Johari or something like that. But the idea is that it's kind of a 2x2 grid, so you get four quadrants. And the first quadrant is what I know about myself and what other people know about me. So this is where we're the most transparent to the world. And then there are things that I know about myself that I don't share with other people, right? And that's called the facade. So I know something, but I'm not telling you or letting you in on that part of my life. And then there's a third window, which is things other people know about me, but things I don't know about myself. And those are called blind spots. And then there's things that I don't know about myself and things that other people don't know about myself. And those are unknowns. But that area of the blind spot, things that other people know about me that I don't know about myself, that's a huge piece of self-awareness. And I think what we need to realize is the only way that we grow and we mature is by inviting other people to help us speak into our lives. And when we're young in youth ministry, what typically happens is we're not always aware of some of those blind spots. When people start chipping away at them, they may not be the best at helping us engage them. And so they hurt us or they injure us in it. Some of that may be us, some of it may be them, but it happens. What happens over time is we become more defensive, we build coping mechanisms so that we can literally, and I've seen this happen with different people, where they literally build a world around them that prevents anyone from being able to share with them something about them they may not want to hear. And that's the worst probable place to be in, because you will ultimately self-destruct, or like the Emperor's New Clothes, everybody will be laughing at you because they see clearly what's going on, and you've totally made a world around you where you don't see it. So it's real important to be in community with people and to be able to always have the approach of this just kind of a basic intellectual humility that I don't know everything. I'm not all I could be. And it's only by being in community with others that I can grow. Our spouses typically are the people that we trust the most to help us with these things. People in the workplace, sometimes less so. And in church, we can be so interwoven with people that sometimes we can It can make it really difficult to hear those things. But I've seen some people carry wounds from the past forward to destructive ends, having affairs, addictions, you know, running away with teenage girls in their youth group or vice versa. And a lot of that came from not being able to be in community in a healthy way. And so that led to a secret world, which would be that facade world, you know, in that window. So it's really important that we explore our blind spots and we don't let them overwhelm us.
Yeah. So especially when you talk about the blind spot side of that and the need for community, this is kind of a tangent off of our topic, but I feel like this is something we should hit.
I love rabbit trails.
Hey. Community obviously is a huge, huge impact on just you being an effective youth pastor across the board, from planning events to what you do in the office, to your parents, to your volunteers, to how effective your youth ministry is to reaching students in your area. There's so many different things. Excuse me. There's so many different things that communities of a part of, but especially when you talk about these blind spots, how can someone go about building that community that is honest with them and authentic with them enough to be like, hey, I see this in you, and like, this is something that really you need to work on, especially thinking in this realm, particularly the youth pastor that moves into a town that they don't know anybody. Like, mm-hmm. how do you build that community, and how do you get, I guess, the groundwork started on finding those people that will lovingly but honestly be open about your goods and your bads?
Yeah. And sometimes, in all honesty, sometimes those people can't be in your community, which is why I think, you know, like Youth Specialties was always such a great environment for people that had affinity with one another to come together. And now with the, you know, social media and things like that, we have all these little clusters and huddles of youth pastors. You know, Mark Ostreicher, who was a former president of Youth Specialties, he has an incredible kind of cohort program that he has that kind of can really help people in safe, high trust environments be able to explore, you know, their beliefs, their personalities, their practices, all of these things. I think we have more opportunities now in youth ministry than ever before, but finding that community, finding those trusted people, there's nothing wrong with having a coach or a counselor. And I think that's really important too, is that we, you know, that we're always looking for those people. Sometimes it's people you pay. Sometimes it's people that you just, you know, through natural relationships. But anytime you go into a community, finding one or two people that can advocate for you like that are really important. And I think just about every church I've ever been in, I've had one or two older men that have been that have kind of taken an interest in me. And I was able to, you know, they were able to coach me along the way or to point some things out to me. So look for that. It can't always be the pastor or the person you report to. So looking for that's important. One of the projects I'm working on right now is with Pete Scazzaro, who wrote Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, Emotionally Healthy Church, Emotionally Healthy Leader, Emotionally Healthy Relationships, and just came out with last year Emotionally Healthy Discipleship. And we are putting together a teen version of this. And it was really interesting working with him, because I've done youth versions of books for, you know, people like philosopher J.P. Moreland and Max Lucado. And so it's like, this was a really different project because it was practice-based. And Pete realized at a point in time in his life as a pastor of a successful, growing, multi-ethnic church in Queens, New York, his wife came to him, basically just said, I love you, but I don't respect your spiritual leadership anymore. I'm going to go to a different church, you know, and this kind of wrecked him. And wow. He started this. Yeah. He kind of realized that he was like emotionally immature, even though spiritual, you know what I mean? And spiritually he had all this knowledge and was successful in by certain measures, but he himself wasn't there. And so the work of these books that he's done are basically his, you know, 20 plus year journey of trying to figure out how to become emotionally healthy. So he actually required me to go through the material for a year. I got an emotionally focused therapist because everybody on their team has one. And I was like going, you know, we don't need a year. I can jump in and get this stuff done. But now we're 2.5 years into the project. And I'm like, wow, I really understand the wisdom of him saying, you have to work on some of the stuff. And so my wife is like, this is like the greatest job ever, because you're becoming a better person while working on this material for young people. And I cannot recommend emotionally healthy spirituality and relationships. You know, the whole emotionally healthy discipleship stuff is, it's fantastic for people in ministry, for anybody who's a Christian, but particularly for people in ministry, because sometimes we don't know where to go to get that on our own. And they actually do training for pastors virtually twice a year. So anyway, it's really good material, but it's something that I wish that I'd had when I was in my 20s. It would have changed so many problems that I faced were really about my own emotional immaturity, not necessarily about other people or the circumstances I was in. It was purely about me just being immature. And nobody was ever helping me address that. The things that they were giving me were, well, be better organized, you know, spend more time putting your messages together, techniques.
Sure.
But we weren't getting to the core of, hey, you're not mature in your faith or your person.
Yeah, no. And I think that kind of leads into my next question. Outside of obviously making sure that maturity is there and being healthy emotionally as well as spiritually, because I think those go hand in hand. What are some other things to prepare yourself from a leadership perspective to address these blind spots as they arise?
Yeah, I think a big thing to realize is that that there are always going to be problems with what we do. And there are always going to be parts of our jobs that we don't want to do. I, to this day, hate doing expense reports. And it crushes me. I have an assistant now that I personally pay to help me with all my receipts and stuff. I still hate doing it because there's still part of the job I have to do. I can't get away with it. So the sooner that I just embrace the fact that, you know what, this is part of the fall. There's part of work you're not going to enjoy, but you have to figure out how to do it. And today people are living up in a strengths-based world, a positive psychology world, where we're told, hey, don't play to your weaknesses, play to your strengths. And so we go, well, I'm an ideator. I'm not really a person who finishes things or gets things done. You know, I need help with that. Yes, that's true. But I think we do have to look at our weaknesses and make sure we have people around them, but realize that we're going to have to do some of that stuff. You're never going to totally avoid the weaknesses that you have in your life. And it is worth investing, you know, in those things. I think as youth workers, we're dreamers and we're motivated to pursue the ideal. We want to live on earth as it is in heaven. We want our young people to be as mature and Christ-like as they can be. We're always seeing what could be. Sometimes we don't realize all the steps it takes to get there. And I found that skills like project management have really helped me actually see more of my ideas come to reality rather than be frustrated by them. Yeah. It's interesting. My son has been diagnosed with ADHD as an adult. I would have never thought that my son had ADHD by anything I ever observed about him in life, but I've been studying about it a lot because he said, Dad, I think you have it too. And as I've been reading about it, I realized, oh, wow, I do have some definite issues with the way my brain's wired, but somehow I managed to get things done and, you know, be successful, even though I am short-circuited by my biology, to some, my neurobiology to some extent. And I think we all have to, I wish I would have had some insight into that when I was younger about why it was hard for me to finish things and why I would get distracted and move on to different things. It was also part of a huge gift too. But I think not leaning into the positive psychology, but realizing there's parts of this job we're going to have to do that we're not going to enjoy. I think another thing that's really important in ministry, youth ministry too, is understanding the context that we're in. One of the things I was doing at Youth Specialties is we were helping do job placements. Brian Abbey joined our team and was building out that part of our ministry. And we started using an assessment called True Motivate, which was basically understanding how we're motivated and what motivates us, what gets us up in the morning. And what we found, I interviewed over 100 youth pastors that took the survey, and I did an hour and a half follow-up with them, kind of a coaching session. What I found was that while the job of youth ministry is the same in almost every context, you know, we have Sunday school, we have a midweek program, we do a fall retreat, we do a spring retreat, we, you know, have a mission trip that we do during the summer, summer camp, a lot of the same rhythms. We got to recruit volunteers, we got to deal with parents. A lot of the job is the same, but the context in which we do that job is really different. You can have some churches that are very goal oriented, and that's going to require somebody who's motivated in a different way than somebody who, than a church environment that's very development oriented, where they're more interested in how deep a young person's going, maybe not as much as how many people are in the room. And so really looking at our context and saying, what is it like for me to wake up every day in this environment? Can I thrive in this environment? Yes, you can do the job, but how you're motivated to do the job and the church context and culture that you're in can really affect whether or not the job is giving you a lift or whether it's wearing you down. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah, no, definitely. And I think there's something to say about your weaknesses too. The fact is they might be your weaknesses, but it doesn't mean you can't get better at them. You can always work to improve the level of your weaknesses. I didn't do the cohort with Marco, but we had Marco early on in this podcast. And then Russell, my co-host, had mentioned the youth pastor coaching that Marco does. And so both of us had gone through youth pastor coaching. And there's a lot of things that go into this, but part of that is going through, you talked about the motivation test, but we use the Enneagram in that. And Enneagram was very much like a, hey, this is kind of your area, but hey, guess what? You have these strengths, but like, here's where you really, really need to work. And it's not necessarily like, here's these things to avoid. It's a, here's where you need to actually like hit the ground running and put your best effort towards, because a lot of times our strengths, those are the ones that we're like, oh yeah, like no big deal. I can do that. But the ones where we notice our weaknesses and we have to use our weaknesses, those are the ones where we have to sit down and actually analyze and process through what we're trying to accomplish for you finishing things with ADHD and everything like that. That's a big deal. And especially when your mind starts going, oh, well, hey, I have this 17 other new ideas. It's like, no, I need a focus and I need to tackle this one. And yeah, very, very important. I wanted to kind of take this as maybe a little bit different, but it's also in youth ministry leadership. And I would also equate this to being watching out for blind spots too. Obviously one of the biggest things with youth pastor leadership outside of parents, is you are also working to readily equip and, add volunteers to your team. And so with that being said, can blind spots play into how you go about your volunteer team as well? What are some blind spots that could potentially pop up as far as your volunteer base? Some things to look out for, maybe if you're looking for new volunteers, because I think that's something that probably also has a few patterns as far as that goes on. Watch out for these volunteers, the ones that are gung-ho, the ones that say they'll do anything, because odds are they're going to burn out or to that nature. So I'm sure there's some blind spots in that area too.
Well, I think, you know, and I think that's where understanding what we tend to gravitate toward people who are like us. And so, you know, I would have so many youth pastors that would say, hey, I will come and I will do any job at Wisdom Works. You know, I just want to be a part of what you're doing in the ministry. And I go, you would hate it here. I go, you're seeing the weekend conference, but during the week, we're on the phones calling youth pastors, begging them to come to the conference where, you know what I mean? It's the work during the week is not what you think it's going to be. And so I realized, you know, they're connecting with me because they see what I'm doing, but what I'm doing is less than 1% of the whole organization. And if I were to bring people on that were fun for me to be around, you know, that I naturally am drawn to, we probably wouldn't get a lot done. We'd sit around and dream all day and talk about ideas and stuff like that. And, you know, nobody would come to the weekend. So understanding, you know, what's the job description of the volunteer? What do I really need in the team around me is really important, because I think sometimes we just recruit people that we're connected to rather than trying to recruit people that really are wired for the job. I think we also have to be really careful about when I've seen some youth pastors that are aware of their weaknesses, and they surround themselves with people that are like get stuff done people, but they can kind of take advantage of them a little bit. And the one thing that I found with people that are servant oriented, that have the gift of tenacity to actually finish things, is that they also need a lot of praise verbally, just to, you know, let them know how great of a job they're doing. And I'm terrible at that. So I've always had to remind that, because I don't often need somebody to tell me I'm doing a good job to keep working, to be motivated. It's not my love language. Nor is it really something that, you know, inspires me. And so I am awful at doing that for other people, but I've noticed that those people often need a lot of just verbal praise to let them know, hey, you're doing a really good job, and we need to be careful not to burn them out so that they can stay in there for the, it's not fair for us to dump everything on them. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, obviously volunteers is one of the routes. Do you see any other areas as far as youth ministry leadership? Because that's quite a broad topic. Do you see any other areas of patterns of blind spots that could be pointed out? Because I think ultimately that's the biggest thing. If I want someone to listen, to get out of this episode from listening to it, is the fact of like, hey, by listing out all these, maybe it's one of those like, oh, I do that. Oops.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Kind of thing like,
well,
that.
Well, there's a reason they're called blind spots, right?
Yeah,
we don't see them in ourselves. And so how are you going to see them? And that's sure. Where something like the Enneagram can be really helpful. You know, any assessment is going to be helpful to you. But some are more helpful than others. You know, one of the sad things that happens in smaller ministries and churches, primarily in nonprofits, is we don't get personal development. And I've had the privilege of serving on some boards with some really amazing, like HR development type people, for, you know, Fortune 500, 100 companies. And I'm like talking about what they do. And I'm like going, man, I've never had anything like that in my life. Like nobody's come up with a great performance plan. Usually when we do performance plans, it's all about goals that we have to hit, but never about personal development. How am I growing and maturing? And, you know, what do I need to become from an interior, you know, person and things like that? What skills do I need to develop? And a lot of times, because our organizations don't have funds for that. I've spent a lot of money in my life, investing in coaches and different deeper assessments than you can do for 20 or 30 bucks, things that cost $400 or $500, with coaching, just to help me understand myself and how to get better. Because I realize the organizations I'm in don't have the funds to do it, but if I want to go to the next level, I need to figure out how to do this. And sure. So I encourage people to set aside, I know as youth workers, you know, it's not like we're rolling in cash, but I always tried to find a way to set money aside to invest in my own personal development, something for myself. And I think that's really important, so that we can find those blind spots. Every actor needs a director. Every director needs a producer. Every writer needs an editor. I mean, it's just really hard to, you know, every athlete has a coach. It's like, you just have to have somebody else who's kind of like helping you. And we see it everywhere else, but in youth ministry, we don't tend to lean into that a lot.
Sure. And I would encourage, if you're listening to this and you're like, well, I don't have the funds, maybe your church does, they just haven't seen it. Yeah. And so maybe you could go present this option of like, hey, could I have $200 a year for continuing education? That's going to help me pay a coach for 4 meetings this year or something to that nature. Whatever that might be, there are multiple ways of getting that going, as far as that goes. But then also, you might just have a family that believes in you in the congregation that is like, hey, you know, I'm willing to sponsor that. Like, I will totally pay for you to go get coaching, go get counseling. That's another one that I very, very much think that most youth pastors should be doing. As far as just, we deal with some very, very thick stuff sometimes. And a lot of times we are ill prepared for when we come to the point of facing it, which leaves even more turmoil in the post end of dealing with that. And so having coaching, having counseling, those are both tremendous things that you can jump in on. And I'm sure that there's someone within your area that would be willing to sponsor that, whether it be your church or whether that be someone in your church, or just making a plea to some of the family around you and being saying, look, hey, I really want to do this. I want to be better at my job. But in order for me to do that, like you said, I have to have a coach. I have to have someone that can walk with me and get me to be better at what I do.
Yeah. So, you know, the first client that I had when I left Youth Specialties, like literally the day after I resigned Brotherhood Mutual Insurance Agency called me and said, we want to start an organization to help pastors, and we want to launch it as part of our kind of 100-year anniversary. Could you help us design this? And I said, well, actually, I just resigned from YS, and I go, I've got some of my time available. And they bought every extra hour I had. And we launched this thing called Full Strength Network. And it's something that churches can subscribe to. And you get a certain number of coaching or counseling sessions in that for a very low price. And what they've done is they've got a network of counselors around the country that basically have said all kind of work at a discounted rate. And then they raise money to supplement the fee that you pay to do that. But that's something to look at. It's a really great option. And I've just seen too many people burn out. I've seen marriages and families fall apart. I've seen youth pastors commit suicide. We are doing heavy work, and we need to have networks around us to support us.
Yeah, very, very much. And if you've been a listener for a while, we had Travis Dean from the National Network of Youth Ministry on our show a couple months ago. And that's another option, just like Youth Specialties was for before the dawn of social media and everything else. They still work to connect youth pastors to where they can have that personal physical connection, to where they can meet for lunch or meet for that cup of coffee and just talk through whatever is going on. And I would say arguably that's one of the biggest blind spots, is a lot of times we have no idea what we're getting into. A lot of times, and I mean, me included, this is totally saying me, when I said I wanted to be a youth pastor, I was like, my youth pastor is amazing. Like, he has the coolest job in the world. Like, get to teach kids about Jesus and then like go take them to go do paintball. Like, how cool is that? Kind of thing like that. And then you walk through your first real traumatic incident of whether it be a kid losing a family member or a kid committing suicide or anything to that nature. And I mean, you're just completely deer in headlights because you have no idea how to proceed or what to do after it's over. And we all need help as far as that goes. So great, great stuff. Other than checking out Pete's books, for the emotional, all the emotional books that he's emotionally healthy books that he's written. And then obviously, going to get, coaching or anything like that. What are some other resources that you'd recommend for our listeners out there to get more information or help with this topic? If you have any.
Yeah, I do. I'm not really prepared off the top of my head to share a lot of them. I wish I'd put a little pile together. I'm like looking at my bookshelf over here going, is there anything that is within arm's reach? But there's a book. Let me see if I can look it up real quick. In fact,
you're good.
The Self-Aware Leader.
Okay.
Discovering Your Blind Spots to Reach Your Ministry Potential by Terry Linhart. It's a great book.
Almost like that book was written for this conversation.
Yep. Yep. And Terry was the first person I saw. I had used the Johari window, but Terry was the first one that I saw put it in this kind of a book format where he kind of talks a little bit about it. But I think it's a fantastic book for young leaders to read. Very well written, very helpful, very practical.
Sure.
You should have him on the podcast, actually. He's a great interview. He's a good friend.
I might have to go after Terry for the show. But yeah, no, the only other thing I would say is if you are completely isolated right now listening to this and you're like, I don't know any youth pastors in town, or I'm the only youth pastor in town, get on social media. There are so many youth pastor groups on Facebook where you can go and you at least have the sounding board of like, hey, I'm alone in my town. I'm the only youth pastor, or I don't know anybody yet. I need ideas, or I need help planning this. There's tons of youth pastors out there that are more than willing to talk and visit and share over social media. And then also you can reach out to us at the podcast. We'd love to talk and do anything we can to help out. But then that kind of leads to my last question, Mark. Obviously, you do a lot for people in the consulting world and still in youth ministry, but how can people connect with you? How can people find out what's going on in your neck of the woods? Great time to throw out any shameless plugs of what you're working on or anything like that.
Well, I'm working on a new book that I don't want to quite talk about quite yet, but
okay,
it'll be done in the next couple months. But I would just push people to Faith for Exiles. This book came out right before the pandemic. It's been considered by many people to be very kind of prophetic in terms of looking at where things were going to go, and where David and I were saying, you know, over the next, you know, 10 years, these things could happen. The pandemic has actually accelerated a lot of those things. And so there's a lot of great insights in that book that I think are really practical as we think about discipleship and how we're trying to help this generation find and follow Jesus. So I would push people to look at that. Also, check out what we're doing at Barna. I don't work for Barna, but I kind of am like an insider there. I'm their insight lead. And so I do a lot of the analysis, and I speak through and for Barna. All my stuff on my calendar is kind of handled through them. But they've done some really incredible work globally on the Open Generation, and some insights there, and looking at teenagers globally. And so I would say that would be a great place to kind of see some of where the Faith for Exiles work has led to that project. So that'd be worth looking at.
Awesome. Well, Mark, it has been a privilege and honor to have you on the show. Like I said, not me as a youth, but me as a youth pastor. I have thoroughly enjoyed what you've done as far as your heart and your passion for youth and what you continue to do. I have not picked up Faith for Exiles yet. I plan on doing that soon. And I would encourage the listeners, like he just said, to pick it up as well. There will be a link to that in our show notes, as well as all the other things that we've talked about. But that is all that we have for this show. Did you know that you can support our podcast by becoming a Patreon member? You can go to patreon.com/talkstudentmen and you can check out how to sponsor us, as well as the different perks that come with being a subscriber. If you can't support us, that's totally fine. We just ask that you do your part to share the podcast with the greater student ministry audience. Share this podcast with your friends. Maybe it's this specific episode or another episode that really stands out to you. But either way, tag the episode, share it with your friends, and tag us as well, so we can be in on the conversation with @TalkStudentMen on all of the social media platforms. And finally, if you are like Mark and you want to be a guest on the show at some point in the future, feel free to reach out to us on social media. You can send us an email, podcast@studentministry.org, and we'd love to set up a time for you to come on the show with us as well. But Mark, man, this has been fun. You are definitely a wisdom that I have watched and followed for a long time. I've enjoyed getting to see you speak, read some of your books. Great topic, and I'm really excited for listeners to get to hear this one. So thanks again.
Great to be with you, Brent.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show again. And for all the listeners out there, we hope you have a great week, and we will see you next time.